Greetings and a warm welcome to another edition of Debate from Press TV headquarters in Tehran. I'm your host, Behruz Necefi. Turkey is deploying forces and military hardware to Manbij, a town in northern Syria, which is held by U.S.-backed Kurdish forces. President Erdogan of Turkey had already spoken of an operation to clear that border area of what he calls YPG terrorists. Now, President Trump has also announced his decision to pull back U.S. forces from Syria. Turkey is saying it will launch the military operation after the U.S. forces pullout is complete. Now, what will become of the Kurdish fighters who have been fighting ISIS or Daesh in Syria? Before we start tonight's debate, let's watch a background report.
Turkey has deployed yet another military convoy to its border with Syria. Reports say different units of the Turkish armed forces have been deployed to the border province of Kilis. Ankara says they are heading towards Jarablus and Manbij. These are cities in northern Syria held by Kurdish YPG forces. Turkey considers the YPG a terrorist organization and has pledged to eliminate them. The deployment follows a surprise announcement by the U.S. president to withdraw U.S. forces from Syria. Some 2,000 American troops had previously protected the YPG. Essentially, a confrontation between the U.S. and Turkish forces has been avoided. However, the Kurds say they have been stabbed in the back by Washington. A fierce battle between the Turks and the Kurds in northern Syria is now a strong possibility. Observers have been questioning Donald Trump's decision to pull U.S. troops out from Syria and what his wider strategy is for the Arab country. Turkey has praised the move. In essence, Trump has traded one ally for another.
When the decision to withdraw is taken, this leads to a change in all balance of power. Thus, this means that Turkey will carry out the offensive.
Senior U.S. administration officials have signaled disapproval at Trump's pullout decision. Defense Secretary James Mattis is the highest profile figure to resign over the move. He has quite reluctantly signed a withdrawal order. Analysts say Trump is struggling to maintain loyalty amongst his senior aides.
Donald Trump can't really retain loyalty among his employees, either in his business life or in the presidency. We've seen scores of individuals and cabinet officials either be fired or leave. They're all, virtually all of them, are under a cloud of suspicion over corruption accusations.
Many experts say U.S. presence in Syria was illegal in the first place and have questioned what American troops were actually doing there. Iran and Russia accuse Washington of helping to destabilize the Arab country and supporting terrorist groups. U.S. troops had no mandate to be there, not from the United Nations, not from the U.S. Congress, not even an invitation letter from the government in Damascus.
Now let's start with our debate, introducing our guests in this edition. We have founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane from Washington, D.C., and also from Answer Coalition, we have Richard Becker, who's joining us from San Francisco. Good to see you both, gentlemen. Now, beginning with Michael Lane.
Thank you.
Syrian Kurdish forces are complaining that the United States has abandoned them, and they describe Trump's pullout decision and Turkey's involvement as a stab in the back. How do you look at it?
Well, I certainly see the Kurd forces' point on this. If it turns out that President Trump's original tweet on this turns out to be exactly the way it was. In that tweet, he said the State Department employees would be coming home immediately within days, and it would be some 60 to 100 days before American forces were able to withdraw. But at that point, they would be gone, and that's a fairly rapid withdrawal, which creates a complete power vacuum in that area, which, you know, could be filled any number of ways. Since that time, of course, we've had the resignation of Defense Secretary Mattis, of a number of other officials, and there are people who are working very, very hard to change the President Trump's mind on exactly what the decision will be and how it will be carried out. Most recently, this morning, President Trump tweeted out that we're going to coordinate very closely with Turkey on a slow and coordinated withdrawal of forces. Now, a slow withdrawal of forces, to me, can be interpreted anyway, but it certainly does not mean that it'll be a 60 to 100 day withdrawal. It might be a much significantly longer withdrawal, and it might be that not all 10,000 U.S. forces do withdraw. If President Trump is being persuaded to change his mind or to modify his decision, that will, of course, mitigate the negative effect that it might have on our allies, the Kurds. On the other hand, we have another ally, which is the Turks. And it would seem that when you have two allies that are not in conflict with each other, that what you want to do is sort of try and stay in the middle and keep them apart. President Trump's original decision is to start to mix and mingle, which I don't think was a good decision. We'll see whether or not the small signals out of the White House at this point indicate that there is going to be a modification or a change in the scope and extent of Trump's original decision.
Okay, now let's go to San Francisco. Richard Becker, the U.S. is leaving northern Syria, and, you know, Kurdish fighters were fighting Daesh there. And Turkish troops will go to northern Syria with the stated goal of fighting the Kurdish fighters who are actually acting as the nemesis of Daesh since its emergence. How can you explain this situation for our viewers?
Well, I think to start with, we know that the big powers don't have any permanent friends. They have permanent interests, or what they view as permanent, the leaders view as permanent interests. But they have no permanent friends, and nothing, no situation in the world could better illustrate this and more graphically define it than the U.S. relationship with the Kurds over really the past century. It's 100 years ago, we just marked the end of World War I. In one of the first treaties after the war, there was a Kurdish homeland, a Kurdish state that was drawn on the maps of the collapsed Ottoman Empire. But by the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923, it was gone. If we come up to the more modern period, in 1975, the U.S. was giving support, including tanks and armored vehicles and so forth, to Kurdish forces that were fighting against Iraq, the government of Iraq at the time, from Iran. And then when Iran and Iraq reached an accord, the U.S. immediately dropped the support, and the Kurdish rebellion at that time collapsed. Over and over and over again, we have seen the U.S. policy, Washington, use the Kurdish people when they wanted to, and then abandon them or turned against them when they felt that their usefulness had come to an end. So that's what we're seeing now. I mean, we don't know really. I would agree that we don't know really whether or not this decision will be changed. The Pentagon is certainly not in favor of it. Trump's foreign policy advisors are not in favor of it. We in the Answer Coalition, as an anti-war organization, are very much for the withdrawal of all U.S. forces from the Middle East. But we can see that Trump has decided that that Turkey, as the eastern anchor of the NATO alliance, he seems to have made the decision that that's the priority now, regardless of what the Kurdish forces, the YPG forces, have done in the past versus ISIS, where they played a big role in fighting against ISIS. Mm-hmm. So this is the way, I would say, this is the way imperialist politics play.
Okay. Now, Michael Lane, many observers have described Trump's redeployment decision as a loss for the United States and a big win for Iran and Russia. You know, President Trump said now that the U.S. has defeated Daesh, it's meaningless to be there, whereas that happened after Iran and Russia intervened. Now, what's your reading of this situation?
Well, you know, President Trump is trying to redefine his policy here at times when he sends out additional tweets that say that the annihilation of the Islamic State was the sole reason for U.S. presence in the theater in a Trump presidency, and that now that they have been annihilated, that our mission is complete and he's going to fulfill his campaign promise of bringing the troops home. Well, there's two things wrong with that. Number one, ISIS has not been completely annihilated. And in fact, this morning, President Trump tweeted out that he had a nice conversation with President Erdogan, and that the Turkish president has assured President Trump that he will complete the mission of annihilating the Islamic State upon the United States vacating the theater with its military forces. The other problem is that the Trump administration has talked repeatedly over the years about maintaining a presence in the theater for purposes not only of eliminating and annihilating the Islamic State, but of mitigating and countering the influence of Russia and its military allies, Iran, Hezbollah, etc., in the Syrian conflict. So for him to conveniently forget that that was a secondary mission that his administration was very publicly identified, and just to say, hey, it's over, based on assurances from President Erdogan that the original mission would be completed, is a bit difficult to really understand what President Trump's objective is here. That's why I think there is some possibility that those remaining foreign policy and military advisors who have his ear are trying to persuade him to in some way modify or slow down or do something differently from what he just announced. And again, the indicator on that was this morning's tweet, where it would be a slow and coordinated withdrawal, whatever that means.
Mm-hmm. All right. Richard, as you know, Turkey is building up forces near the Syrian border. It's promised to purge Kurdish forces there, who it considers a threat to Turkish security. Now, Syria regards this a violation of its territorial integrity. How can this incursion be justified in the first place?
Well, it can't be justified. It's not, and I don't even think that there's much of an attempt to justify it. It's just that this is what the Turkish government wants to do. It wants to go in and crush the YPG, and it would, of course, be a violation of Syria's national sovereignty, which has been violated by a number of powers who are not invited to come in, but have, including the United States and several other countries, and particularly Turkey, which has supported and continues to support the so-called rebel forces in Syria. And in fact is saying, and they are saying themselves, that the remnants of the Free Syrian Army will join in the attack if the attack actually takes place on the Kurdish area, the area where the Syrian Democratic Forces, because it's not just the Kurds, but also they have some other allies that are there. But there, so we have a continuation, really, of the war in Syria and against Syria. A war that is the U.S. supported for many years, proclaiming that it was only the downfall of the Assad government that would be acceptable to the U.S. and the British and the French and Turkey. They all said the same thing. They failed to do that. They failed to overthrow the government to bring about regime change. But they're continuing the war. And this is a multi-sided war. It's a complex war, as we can see, and just in this discussion we can see. But it's not. There's no justification for it whatsoever. Syria, the foreign forces that have come in to overthrow the government should withdraw. This intervention should be ended, and there should be no Turkish attack on Syria, mm-hmm. any part of Syria.
Okay, back to Washington. Michael Lane, French President Emmanuel Macron has deeply regretted Trump's decision to pull American troops out of Syria. He stressed that an ally should be, quote, reliable. Also, U.S. Defense Secretary James Mattis, in his resignation letter, condemned his boss's, quote, disrespectful handling of allies. So why is Trump doing this to Kurdish fighters? How could U.S. allies, trust the U.S.?
Well, as Richard Becker pointed out in one of his previous answers, we have the Kurds as, you know, sort of an on-again, off-again, but mostly on historic ally for the last 100 years. We have Turkey, who is sometimes lukewarm and sometimes luke-chilly ally through NATO, and their ideas are conflicting at this point. So what the United States has traditionally done has tried to balance them, to stay in the middle, to keep the Turks and the Kurds from really escalating anything into a situation that becomes untenable. And this proposed move or withdrawal of all forces from the area, complete with a coordinated invitation to Turkey to bring its forces into the area when it already has an announced plan to move the Kurds back from the Turkish border, creates a conflict that's difficult to understand. I think that there are people probably arguing today, yesterday, the day before, to President Trump to rethink this, that this is not the right way of going about this, that we understand the campaign promise to withdraw the troops, but there are ancillary missions involved in this, and certainly one of them is keeping two allies of ours from going after each other. It's difficult to understand why it would go through the way it was announced. We'll see if there are modifications to it.
Okay, Richard, relations between Turkey and U.S. had soured over these Kurdish fighters in northern Syria. If you remember, they had soured relations. Now Ankara is pleased with Mr. Trump's troop withdrawal. What has changed here, which is difficult to understand, maybe, as Michael says? Could this be some kind of a new deal between Turkey and the U.S.?
Well, I wouldn't call it a new deal, because the reality is that for many years, the United States supplied the F-16s and all kinds of military equipment that the Turkish government and the Turkish military used against the Kurds inside Turkey. And the largest Kurdish population in the world is inside Turkey by a large margin. The Kurds are divided among Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Turkey, but the largest number are in Turkey. 4,000, I believe the number now is that 4,000 Kurdish villages were demolished in the 1980s and 90s and early 2000s by the Turkish military. So the relationship between the U.S. and Turkey has been a key relationship from the point of view of NATO and U.S. Imperial designs on the Middle East for a long time, since World War II. And the U.S. looked the other way, never said anything about the oppression, and still doesn't say anything about the oppression of the Kurdish people inside Turkey. They have, if you're a Kurd who lives in Turkey, you're the enemy, or the U.S. goes along with the policy of repression. And then they've said that they were allies in the northern part of Iraq and in Syria. But it can all turn in a moment. And again, I would repeat that there's no permanent interest that Washington has. No permanent friends, just permanent interests.
Okay, Michael Lane, one last question, and please answer me briefly. Is Turkey going there to northern Syria to fight ISIS or Daesh, or to simply take out the Kurdish fighters there? 30 seconds, please.
Probably both. They did promise President Trump that they would take out the rest of remaining pockets of Daesh, and I suppose, you know, Turkey has problems with them as well. They have legitimate interests, everybody does, in destroying, completely annihilating ISIS. But at the same time, they're going to have a huge military force there. They have a historic problem with the Kurds. They're going to have the opportunity to do something about that. Okay. I don't know exactly the extent of the conflict, but I think the odds are high there will be armed conflict between the Kurds and Turkey.
Okay, Richard, very briefly.
Well, I think that, that's what we're looking at, is a continuing unfolding of the crisis inside Syria and new dimensions to the crisis. The idea that the U.S. was in Syria mainly to fight against Daesh, I don't think that's the truth. I think the truth of the matter is the U.S. deployment there is part of a much wider deployment all over the region, aimed to a large degree at Iran. So the U.S. has forces all over the Middle East, North Africa, and beyond, of course, and the deployment of U.S. forces there is part of a larger strategy that Trump seems to be getting in the way of from the point of view of other foreign policy leaders.
All right, we're just out of time. Let me thank our guests who joined us. We had founder of American Institute for Foreign Policy, Michael Lane from Washington, D.C., and also with Answer Coalition, we had Richard Becker joined us from San Francisco. And we also thank our viewers for watching this debate. We'll see you next time.